Good morning. Hi, I'm Stacey Zuber. I guess I'm the last presenter for this session. I'm going to be talking about a meta-analysis I've conducted looking at the effect of tillage on soil microbial biomass and enzyme activity, so kind of moving away from the molecular techniques to some of the other methods for assessing soil biology and soil health through soil biology. Most of my introduction here we've heard already in a lot of the other presentations in the session, so I'll go through them pretty quickly. But obviously from the sessions we've heard, you know, soil microbial communities are an essential component in trying to develop a sustainable agricultural management practice because of the effect of soil biology on other characteristics of soil quality and soil health through the cycling of nutrients, affecting the stability of soil organic matter, potential for erosion through controlling that by aggregate stability. Illustrating how important soil biology really is to a lot of other factors when we're looking at management practices. The key things that we are affecting with our management practices, how they affect the microbes, are their food source, so the residues that they have available and root exudates. And for agricultural systems, those are always, no matter how diverse your rotation, they're always going to be less diverse than you would find in a natural ecosystem. We're also altering the environmental conditions, so the soil temperature and moisture, the soil pH, other factors as well that we're affecting. What we want to do through our agricultural management practices and through this session is kind of trying to identify how we can possibly select management practices to kind of, if not manipulate, at least encourage a more beneficial microbial community to try to also improve our agricultural productivity through our soil health. So I did this through the meta-analysis. There was a presentation about two presentations ago also doing a meta-analysis. Basically, just a really brief background, we're using this to try to increase our sample size, increase our inference space to look much larger scale than just on a single field experiment. So these are just a couple of the ones out there on that are similar to the one that I'm working on, looking at management practices like rotation and fertilization. There has been one conducted looking at tillage, but that was primarily tillage experiments in Brazil. So I'm trying to look on a much larger scale, a global assessment. So when we're looking at tillage, particularly when we're talking about how we can affect that soil environment, we're affecting the distribution and the size of the residues in the soil, so how easily the microbes can access their food source, also affecting the moisture, the temperature, and also possibly decreasing organic matter through tillage. So other food sources that for that soil organic matter stored there in that soil. So the objectives of my meta-analysis, basically to determine the effect size of tillage compared to no-till, focusing on microbial biomass to try to assess our size of the microbial community, and then to look at maybe more of the functional diversity of that community, looking at enzyme activities. And then also evaluating other sources of variation due to other management practices, and then even the environmental conditions, the climate, and the soil type. So again, like I said, I'm doing tillage versus no-till. Those are my treatment pairs in my meta-analysis are going to be. I looked at seven different microbial properties. I'm only going to focus on four of them today. Microbial biomass, carbon, and nitrogen. And then for the enzyme activities, I looked at fluorescein diacetate and dehydrogenase as indicators of total microbial activity. I'm only going to talk about dehydrogenase today. And then beta-glucosidase as soils are for carbon cycling. And then urease for nitrogen cycling. But again, I'm only talking about those four that are circled for today. So just the steps in conducting a meta-analysis, I'm going to just go over this really briefly. The important points on this, I limited it to the years 2000 to 2014 for published articles, specifically for field trials and with a grain system, and then making sure that we had a till and no-till treatment pair within those published articles. with at least one of the parameters that I mentioned previously. So with those, I ended up with 66 published peer-reviewed journal articles that we extracted the data from, and from those we got 141 treatment pairs. We don't have 141 for each of the parameters. Some of them, it's only about 20. Others, I have, I think, microbial biomass carbon, I have 93, so there's quite a variety of those, but overall we had 141 treatment pairs. So we also looked at other experimental factors. These were looking for other sources of variation in our data, so specific things about the tillage, the type of implements they used, the depth of tillage. We looked at the crop rotation, nitrogen, and then environmental, the climate, the soil types. And this is where we were able to put them, if we had multiple treatment pairs from an experiment or from a published study, we included them if we were able to categorize them as within a separate group for these categories. So for instance, if we had two different tillage practices within one study, if they were done with different tillage implements, we could make two separate treatment pairs from that. So I kind of went completely globally. I had all of our continents except for Antarctica representative in this, not quite as many in Africa, but I still was able to get three studies from Africa. So we have a wide representation globally within this meta-analysis. So the effect size that we calculated was a response ratio of the mean of the microbial property for the till versus the no-till. We transform them to normalize them, and we used a weighted mean based on the standard deviation in the sample size. There were some standard deviations we weren't able to get from the publications, and for that we estimated them using single imputation, using the calculated coefficient of variation from the known means and standard deviations. So we use that estimation practice. So just looking at our general data for those four variables that I'm looking at today, we found that they were all significant for our test for total homogeneity. What that means is when we look at our data, there's quite a bit of variability, and we can start looking at other sources of variation. So I just want to make sure and clarify, when you're looking at this, I am showing them as the log response ratio on our x-axis at the bottom. So for here, if it is on the line, the mean for the till and the no-till was the same. If we are going to the negative side, then till was less than no-till. So the farther you go, the more negative our LRR is, then the more till was greater than the more no-till was greater than our till. And as you go to the right and to the positive values, till was greater than no-till. So you can see we have the majority of our data for our four variables that we were looking at. Till was less than no-till, which is what we were expecting for most of these. We did have some where they were the same or even greater for till versus no-till. So that's where we want to look at our other sources of variation to kind of evaluate those. So this is just some of them. If you look at this table, I looked at 8 different possible sources, and almost all of them are significant. So that means there's a lot of different places we can look at, and I'm not going through all of these. I'm going to look at just 3 of them today: tillage implement, crop rotation, and climate, and just for certain ones of these variables where they were the most significant. So we start with the highest sources of variability within those microbial properties. So looking at tillage implement, so these we grouped based on what the tillage implement it was. For microbial biomass carbon, we had enough different variables that we were able to look at chisel tillage and disc separately. Unfortunately, for the other variables, the sample size was a lot smaller, so I grouped chisel and disc together as reduced tillage. And then on here, we had moldboard tillage, and then the moldboard plus. There was a number of the studies where they had more moldboard tillage, plus discing or adding chisel afterwards. So there were basically two types of primary tillage that they did one after another, and then almost all of these were also followed by secondary tillage of a field cultivator or harrow or something like that. So looking at these, just starting with microbial biomass carbon, all of our tillage implements caused our microbial biomass to be less under that tillage than the no-till, except for chisel tillage. So in this case, for chisel tillage, microbial biomass was not different from no-till. So that's a good sign for that we're maintaining high microbial biomass under chisel tillage compared to our no-till. And you can see from microbial biomass nitrogen, our Moldboard Plus, which had the extra tillage there, was much lower for tillage compared to no-till. So there's some trends there. And then for beta-glucosidase, that's our indicator of carbon cycling. Again, reduced tillage was the same for the reduced tillage as the no-till, but with Moldboard, we had a decrease in beta-glucosidase activity under Moldboard tillage compared to no-till. And Moldboard Plus for both microbial biomass nitrogen and beta-glucosidase, there was a lot of variability. It's kind of surprising for beta-glucosidase since we have a fairly large N for that with 18, but there's just a lot of variability under for that treatment apparently within the data. So for crop rotation, I group these based on so we have 1-year rotations and 2-year rotations, just meaning that they repeat that every year. And then the first one year with one species, that's just a monoculture, corn monoculture, sorghum, whatever it was. And then the 1 year with more than one species within it, that could be adding a cover crop, that could be intercropping. In some cases, that was a winter crop and a summer crop. But the idea with this was the same rotation repeated each year, but they used two species within that year. And the same thing for the 2-year rotation. We have 2 years with two species, and then we have 2 years with more than two species. So for those, you can see when we added the extra species for microbial biomass nitrogen, adding that extra species in a 1-year rotation, changing it from that monoculture, did allow the tillage to be the same as no-till, whereas it was lower than no-till with just the monoculture. For our 2-year rotation, we didn't see that same trend. When we added extra species to it, it actually went down for tillage compared to that, although the 95% confidence interval does overlap. And then for beta-glucosidase, for beta-glucosidase, just moving from a 1-year rotation to a 2-year rotation caused that tillage to be the same as no-till, whereas with a 1-year rotation, we had lower activity for beta-glucosidase in tillage compared to no-till. And the third of my moderating variables that I'm going to talk about today is climate. So for this, for microbial biomass carbon, tropical climates, so our warmer climates, the till was the same as no-till, whereas for the slightly cooler climates in subtropical and the cooler and temperate, we see that till is less than no-till for those, and that trend is even more pronounced in our microbial biomass nitrogen, where as you go to a cooler climate, till microbial biomass is much lower than for our warmer climates in tropical. Okay, and then for dehydrogenase, so this is the one that we're looking at as showing us about total microbial activity. The key thing on this that I thought was interesting was looking at the semi-arid climate where you have less precipitation. In that case, there's no difference between till and no-till, and that was a little surprising to me. I thought that no-till would affect it more because in the drier climate, maybe you would have a greater water retention with your no-till, but I think it's so dry that it's suppressing all of it compared to our other climates, and so you don't see any difference there regardless of what tillage practice is being done. Okay, so for the conclusions, and most of this is kind of just what I've already mentioned, but with our more intensive tillage, that's going to reduce microbial biomass carbon and beta-glucosidase compared to reduced tillage and no-till. But the important thing with that was that there were tillage practices, the reduced tillage, the chisel tillage, where we were able to maintain microbial biomass carbon and beta glucosidase levels to the same level as we had with no-till. So there are that gives us the idea that even with some tillage, we are still having fairly at least similar to our no-till practices for these microbial activities. When we're looking at the crop rotation, if you're adding a crop to your monoculture, that can increase your microbial biomass nitrogen with the tillage, but we didn't see that same pattern, that same effect, adding a crop species to your two-year rotation. For beta-glucosidase, we saw a decrease with tillage when we had the monoculture, but it maintained the same level in a two-year rotation regardless of the tillage practice. For climate, with the cooler climate, we saw lower microbial biomass, carbon and nitrogen compared to no-till. And then with that less precipitation, it was similar regardless of the tillage practice. So I only focus on those three, and this is kind of a little bit preliminary where I haven't looked at all of the other elements on that giant table that had lots of significance. So there was a lot of other areas in this that I'm planning to look at and hoping to evaluate, because there are a lot of other sources of variability yet in this data. Okay, but I just like to acknowledge my funding source and all of the help I had with my lab and from my advisors on working on this, and I will take any questions now.
We're actually scheduled for a few minutes of discussion. If anyone has questions for any of our speakers, if they're still left, or thanks for coming.
David, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When you apply your 16S OTU assignments to hive crops, what proportion of your total library is actually interpretable by
PyPrus
and gets assigned a reference genome?
They all do.
so you set the probability of assignment to some level where you will get a reference genome.
Yeah, so it's you can set it up to different you can actually use different mappings. So whether you set it up to a 3% OTU, 5, 10, and then for each one, PyCrust actually has a reference genome. Some are closer than others,
yeah,
but they all do have a reference genome.
Okay.
Daniel, yeah.
I have a question mostly for you, but for others too. It's obvious you have to calculate, estimate some kind of index, but because the farmers aren't selling genes, is there some way to make the index, to optimize the index using the outcomes like aggregate stability or yield or things like that?
That's the goal. And this is still very preliminary. And we, the validation data just came off the machine last week. So that's the plan. Part of in our unit in ARS, we have a new position for an economist, and that's hopefully that's part of the goal, is that we'll be looking at economic trade-offs with a lot of these different indices and what everyone's doing. So it's on the radar and needs to be done. But yeah, anyone else? Thanks, everyone.